It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Every second Wednesday of the month, we sit down with Mayor Bill Peduto to discuss a variety of issues, and there is certainly no shortage of them on this ninth day of March. As Mayor Peduto joins us in studio, he's just back from the National League of Cities Congressional City Congress he took part in earlier this week in Washington, D.C. Mayor Peduto, welcome back to the city and the show.
Thanks. So I was just listening to that groovy music, and, you know, it should be like Essential Pittsburgh, Paul Guggenheimer.
Are we rolling on this right now? Are we rolling on this?
You can over put my voice over it.
Sure.
Yeah. I was down there for the weekend. I got a nice opportunity to talk with the new Secretary of Education, Dr. King, about some programs. He was calling out Pittsburgh in particular. We're looking at...
Calling us out?
Well, because we did not get the first round of pre-K funding, and I was pretty upset about it because it was something that I talked to the president about directly and said, you know, instead of doing this, do this, and let cities compete. And so they created a program for it. In fact, it was I was invited to the White House to announce the winners that didn't include Pittsburgh. And so he said, I know Mayor Peduto is pretty upset, but I got to tell you, we're going to do another round. So I said, you know, the flaw was in the way you did it. You had states apply. So Pittsburgh had the foundation community, the corporate community, city government, the schools, all the different entities, corporations that were willing to put skin in the game. And then the state applied Pittsburgh with about 18 other school districts that didn't even have an interest in the program. And our proposal became so watered down that we weren't selected. So hopefully we're going to see a new round. We're going to be able to do some more with pre-K. I also met with the Deputy Secretary of Commerce looking to create a pilot program for neighborhood business districts. There used to be Main Street money that would put in nice trees and fix the sidewalks and do the brick and mortar on facade grants. But what if you invested in the people? What if you could take a neighborhood like Sheridan or Beachview or Homewood and start to not only fix the building, but offer 2 years free rent for the entrepreneur that wants to start their own barbershop or their own copier place or frame place or transmission shop, and give them an opportunity to do so. So we've been asked over the course of the next few weeks to write a proposal. It's not a big
ticket. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about these things is, you know, all the secretaries are there. Many of the deputy secretaries in the White House. And there aren't that many cities. I mean, the big cities go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. That's where you see New York and Chicago and Mayor Walsh in Boston and Mayor Garcetti from L.A. In the National League of Cities, it's more of the Huntington, West Virginia, Jackson, Mississippi. So Pittsburgh is pretty big. And it's pretty easy to have one-on-ones with some of these secretaries and pitch some ideas and get directly into their brain.
And this is coming to Pittsburgh in November.
Yeah, so we're going to host it. It will be, 200th party next Friday, the bicentennial of the city of Pittsburgh when we became incorporated as a city, which was March 18th, 1816. And Mayor Joe Armstrong laid the foundation for the city-county building on March 18th, 1916. So we're going to celebrate 2016 in the city-county building. We're going to have all-day events. There's going to be dozens of Pittsburgh institutions. We're going to do a pop-up Pittsburgh history throughout the building. People are encouraged to stop on by. There will be walking tours of the building itself, music, food, of course, a birthday cake. And then going into the night, a gallery crawl throughout all of downtown Pittsburgh, celebrating our arts and our culture. And then in November, the National League of Cities is coming. They'll be here for Light Up Night, which will be another celebration of the anniversary. And in between, in July, when Ebenezer Denny became the mayor of Pittsburgh, when we got our seal and everything else and our charter, we'll be celebrating that as well, July 9th, with a big parade, all-day concerts, and some other fun stuff.
Wow, that's terrific. A party in Pittsburgh a week from Friday.
How about pop-up Pittsburgh in the city-county building?
Sure.
I kinda like that.
All right. Pop up Pittsburgh. Just pop in.
Pop in next Friday. Come on down, see us.
Sounds like fun. If you'd like to join the conversation, pop into the show, as it were, today with a question or comment for Mayor Peduto, You can call 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Mayor Peduto, certainly one of the big stories that's been happening in Pittsburgh concerns the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority. Executive Director Jim Good resigned after the PWSA amassed $32 million in unpaid water and sewer bills, along with hundreds of complaints. How did it get to this point?
It's a great question. It isn't that we didn't know that there was a problem that was existing, but instead of dealing with it as a systematic breakdown, it was dealt with by individual issues and trying to collectively put those together in trying to analyze a problem. It's a systematic breakdown. A systematic breakdown requires a systematic change. So the billing procedure, the customer service of how people were treated when dealing with a broken billing situation is going to be overhauled. And that becomes part of the restructuring of PWSA. The restructuring will most likely involve restructuring of how the administration of the authority is managed, new titles, new roles, new people. There will be a different look at how we're dealing with our capital projects. We, in the past, had gone on a yearly or biannual basis. You can't control an asset that size. You can't control your house if you think about, well, every 2 years I'll analyze what I need. So a 10-year system needs to be implemented. The budget of PWSA is completely broken. The amount of debt that is paid on an annual basis, because the amount that was borrowed for decades in the past limits the ability to do things. So we have Mr. Donahue in place now for the next 6 months to help us to not only realize what the problems are, we pretty much know them, but to start putting together the structure for the next director to be able to have a shot at being able to address them. This authority has had 20 years of being basically ignored. We're in danger of losing the asset, and it's going to require a swift overhaul in order to be able to get control of it.
So you said part of the problem was the PWSA's reluctance to recognize a systematic issue. Now that it has been recognized, what do you think needs to be done to fix the problem? In
a lot. We've got a really good board. So let me start with that. Then the people on the board are highly professional, come from varied backgrounds, understand water systems, understand engineering, understand law, understand finance, understand labor issues. It's sort of like the Noah's Ark of one, of all these different people that make up that board. I'm going to rely upon them and their expertise to help to guide us. But, you know, we have some major, major issues facing that authority. And it is in the finances. It is in the way that it is operated. It is in the way that it treats its customers. It's not one issue that needs to be resolved. It's a culture change that needs to occur and should have occurred decades ago.
As a citizen, as a resident of Pittsburgh yourself, I also live in the city. I get those PWSA bills, and I, for the life of me, can't figure out. There's no rhyme or reason to when and how they arrive. I used to get a bill every month. Then all of a sudden, for several months, I didn't receive any bill. Then a huge bill came in December, or relatively huge for a single guy, you know, as one person in one house. And I paid that bill in December. Now here we are in March. I have not received a bill since. Do you sit there and get those same kinds of, you know, crazy?
No, I get the complaints everywhere I go. It's unacceptable. I mean, there is no acceptable reason that we shouldn't be able. And listen, I get it. They change technology. The new technology that reads the bills, you know, the bills are read electronically, was not compatible with Pennsylvania American. But then we found out that the problems were not only happening with Penn American, they are happening with PWSA accounts as well. And there's been over a year and a half to get it right, and we're still not there. So if it requires bringing in third parties and experts in the systems, then we will bring in third parties to do it, but we're going to get it resolved. I mean, the entire situation can't be dealt with on individual basis. It has to be completely overhauled, and it may require going anew. Now, the company that put in these systems may be at fault as well, and we're looking at that. So there's a lot of different moving parts here right now, but it can't continue for another month. It just can't.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Carlana in East Liberty. Hello, Carlana. You're on with Mayor Peduto.
Hi. I'm calling to suggest that the city maybe get CMU and Pitt to sponsor a big conference, a scientific conference, on how to use water lines, newly built water lines and newly built sewage lines, to produce energy. There are cases, Brainerd, Minnesota has one, where the sewage and the pipes are producing the heat for the police station and the library and city. And there are devices that can turn water lines to produce energy. The motion of the water going through the lines can be captured to produce energy. And if we're going to make a huge investment in sewage pipes and water pipes that are breaking every day, why not look into the possibility of a double use, which would be producing the water for our houses and taking the sewage away, to producing energy for the city?
Love it. Yeah. Often thought about why we don't have turbines in areas like Highland Park Reservoir as the water runs down and it's turning turbines and creating kinetic energy. But love the idea of opening it up to both schools. We've been partnering a lot with the University of Pittsburgh on energy issues, just partnered with them with Duquesne Light down in Woods Run. We're going to be creating a microgrid system on a direct energy program that will be 100% renewable. Duquesne Light, that is powered mainly by coal and nuclear, is going to be creating a renewable energy facility that will help power its facility down in the north side. And they're working with the Swanson School at Pitt for that. And, you know, the combination of challenging both universities to come up with some of these solutions when it comes to something that's already there, where the water's already running, right? Might as well be producing and turning something to make energy. That's a great idea.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest, Mayor Bill Peduto, making his monthly visit to the program. If you have a comment or question for Mayor Peduto, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Last night, Mayor Peduto, WESA, collaborated on a panel discussion led by NPR Weekend All Things Considered host Michelle Martin at the August Wilson Center on reinventing the American city. The challenges facing Pittsburgh were an integral part of that discussion, including housing issues. One of the panelists suggested that gentrification in some Pittsburgh neighborhoods has happened so fast that opportunities to create affordable housing in those areas are gone. What is your take on that?
Well, I would argue that the opportunity to create affordable housing is always there as long as you put resources behind it. So, you know, having worked in city government for 22 years, I've watched neighborhoods change quite a bit. My old council district, I remember when the east part of Shadyside, Ellsworth Avenue, was pretty much bombed out. And there was a vacant apartment building that didn't have windows. That sat there for 20 years. There was a little pink house next to it with all boarded up and trees growing out of it. About one out of every four, one out of every five storefronts along Ellsworth was empty or abandoned. And then you saw the change start to happen in that part of Shadyside that had basically been part of East Liberty, started to become reborn. Now, why weren't people displaced when the rents rose and doubled in that part? Well, they were, but there's a difference between when you have an area that you rent that is affluent compared to poor. And there's a difference when you have a neighborhood that is mainly renters and mainly people who own. And there's a lot of people who want to try to look at affordable housing and come up with one solution that fits all. And it's a far too complex issue to be able to do so. And in fact, any city that's tried to do it that way has failed. And sometimes actually created the problem and made it worse. So if you look at it as rich, poor, rent, own, and you have these four blocks, if you're rich and you rent and the property values go up, what happens is people move. They move from Shadyside to Friendship. They move from Friendship to Lawrenceville. They move from the South Side to the South Side Slopes. They basically redevelop other neighborhoods, and you see it all across the world. That they're the transit. They're the young people. They have a higher income, and they find the next hip place and help to create it. Now, if you're rich and you own, and the rent, and the prices go up, you become richer. Your house is worth more, and you have more equity in it, and you become wealthier.
If you're somebody that bought a house in Lawrenceville, what, maybe 10?
Now, let's consider that poor. Let's not consider it, but that also means working class. So if you're in that area and you own, then the biggest challenge to you is your property taxes, because you now have an asset worth more than the folks in Lawrenceville that worked in the mills. It's worth more than their pensions. That house that a few years ago might have sold for $60,000 is now worth $360,000. But you don't want to see them pushed out because of property taxes. So you have to deal with that issue, and eliminating gentrification by pushing people out who own through dealing with the property tax issue. And we can do that, and we're working on a way to be able to do that in neighborhoods. But here's the big one. If you're poor and you rent, you're displaced. And that's where we have to have incentives to create more affordable housing in areas that have a hot market, and stop incentivizing market rate in those areas when people could build it without public subsidy. So what has happened in a neighborhood like East Liberty is for 10, 15 years, we've been incentivizing market rate housing, high rent housing, and giving government money to build more. It doesn't need that. What needs it is an incentive program so that there is affordable housing in that neighborhood. And the developer that's willing to put in 40% affordable housing should be the one who is getting that incentive. So it's using resources to be able to create affordability in low-income areas where there is a lot of people who rent. And we have mapped it out. And you can see specifically where the next areas will be and where the next dangers will be. But if you simply try to put out one size fits all, we just have to do this and all the problems will be solved, you not only limit the amount of market rate housing, but you also limit the amount of affordable housing, which just makes the rents go higher and higher because of supply and demand. So you have to realize and break down the city, and you can, into those four categories to come up with the tools that will be necessary to create affordability throughout.
We're talking with Mayor Peduto today on Essential Pittsburgh. We have callers waiting to jump in, and certainly more topics and questions to get to with the mayor. We'll do that after we take a break. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with the mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, on today's show, as we do each and every second Wednesday of the month.
Essential
go.
Pittsburgh.
Go for it.
Paul Guggenheimer. I see, now every time I hear that song, I'm going to be singing that song.
That's our new theme. That's it. I think I've made an executive decision that we're going to roll that every time. Poor Katie O'Malley from your office is sitting here.
She doesn't even like it when I tweet. So, you know, she's like, if she had her way, it would be like my fingers would be controlled by rubber bands that would not allow me to tweet on my phone.
I'm looking at what you're doing with the phone, and it is constantly lighting up. I mean, is that one of the added challenges of being a mayor in the 21st century, is that you have to manage all these devices as well as just your own thoughts?
So somebody put it up on Twitter. I laughed and said, absolutely. Best ways to reach me: number one, text; number two, email; number three, DM on Twitter; number four, climb in through my window; number five, send me a message on LinkedIn. So you got all these different things, and people are like, you know, I'll see someone, they'll be like, you never respond to any. I'm like, what did you? I didn't even get a message from you. I sent you three messages on Facebook. And they're like, you know what? I'm sorry, I'm 51. That's really not at a there's certain ways of communication that are in my world, you know, relevant. But if you're talking about something that is not a personal, like, friendship thing, and you're trying to communicate with me on Facebook, it just, you know, I never got that memo. So
a lot of people haven't.
Yeah. So it's not that there is a lot of people that want to be able to talk. That's given. That Sophie had that, right?
Yeah.
But Sophie had a phone. Yeah. And that's how you did it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm guessing she didn't mess with anything else other than the phone.
It didn't even exist, you know, so there wasn't even voicemail. So in these days, I guess, around that time. So anyways, it's just all the different points of entry to be able to do it, to be able to manage it, which is just too much. So if I don't reply to you on LinkedIn or on Facebook or on some other social media, you can always call my office at 412-255-2626.
There you go.
412-255-2626. And we'll go 1980s.
Or right now at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Matt in Morningside, who had a question for you. Mayor, hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hey.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm an architect working out of my home in Morningside. I do a lot of work in the city, and I have been heartened by the improvements with the new permits, licenses, and inspections department, the streamlining of the process through zoning and into building permit submittal, the ability to reach inspectors. It's all great, but the problem is there's apparently been a bloodletting as far as plan examiners are concerned, and what my last permit took 6.5 weeks to be processed for a little storefront renovation, and I've been told that now it's up above 2 months. So I'm wondering, is this a problem that's on anyone's radar, and is there a solution in the offing? Because there are far more important people than me who I'm sure are being inconvenienced.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've had a success rate since taking office, and I give that all the credit to the director, Maura Kennedy. We had come in and it was on average 7 to 10 weeks to be able to do just a basic permit, and several months, 7 to 8 months on some, that were basically killing projects. She's been working with new software, Acela software, and some of it is compatible with some of the other software we have that we use in the city, like for things like using a credit card. In that case, actually, it isn't. And so we have a plan to modernize the entire department, but it's going to take some time. When she came in, the inspectors didn't have computers. They now have computers and cell phones. When she came in, the only way that you could reach an inspector was between the hours of 8 and 10 in the morning. Then they were in the field. They now have cell phones so that you can text them while they're in the field. And those simple things happened immediately. The more complex ones that will reduce the time down to a standard, which I believe is 20 days on a national standard for a permit to be issued for a building department, will be something that we're trying to get to by the end of this year. But it will require probably purchasing some new software, because the software that we have contracts with is not compatible with the state of the art that we're working with. The other thing too is you can go online now and see where you are. You never had that ability before. But what also can happen is community groups can go in line too and say, what's going on with that property down the street? Seems like they've had that, you know, they said they were going to do it for a while, and also be able to check and see where the status is. So we're not only going to make it easier, we're going to make it very, very, very transparent.
Let's go to Dr. Nyron in the North Hills. Dr. Nyron is apparently not there anymore. He's a doctor. He's a busy man.
Yes.
How about Ed in Monaca? Hi, Ed. You're on with Bill Peduto.
Hi, Mayor. I'd like to give you my compliments and accolades from someone who's not in the city. But so much is being done so well in Pittsburgh. It's just, I'm proud to be from Pittsburgh again. And when change comes up and people say, what about this? What about that? Because there's certainly things we still need to do. It's nice to know that there's somebody in that office that hasn't lost his soul. We're fortunate to have you as mayor, and I want to say thank you.
Thank you from Beaver County. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Ed. In the wake of the eviction of tenants of East Liberty's Penn Plaza apartments, the city and the Affordable Housing Task Force have scheduled forums this month where the public can participate in discussions on increasing the supply of housing options. Talk about the goal of these forums, Mayor.
Well, the goal is to get people's comments before we enact final legislation. There's part of it is, you know, as the one developer said, it's too late. You can't build affordable housing in some neighborhoods. So we have to move now. I mean, we can't wait till the final report. We have to put things and plans in place to be able to create more opportunities for affordable housing in the city. The nice thing about it, too, is we can learn from Seattle and from San Francisco and from New York and Boston and Washington, D.C., that have all gone through this problem about 10 years ago. We're still in the top five for the most affordable cities to buy, and we're still in the top 10 for the most affordable cities to live in. But it's going to change fast, and it's going to change fast in neighborhoods that people don't even think about, in Homewood, in The Hill, in Hazelwood. There's going to be market rate housing that will be moving in that will put stresses on. So what we want to do is hear from people, give them the opportunity to talk about not only the problem, because everyone can identify the problem, but what are the solutions? And then what are you willing to do to help us to be able to see that solution happen? In other words, especially people in neighborhoods that are going through the transition, getting involved in your community, making it a community-based plan that shows this is a green light, this is what we want to see, this is a yellow light, what we don't want to see, and this is a red light. But what can't be a discussion is the city shouldn't have any market rate housing. We have to stop all development. We have to be able to just build only affordable. You can't operate a city and have that happen because you can't keep schools open when you don't have revenue. You can't pave streets. You can't have police. You can't have all those things people want to see in a community, like parks and cleanliness and safety, if you don't have a tax base. So you have to have a mix. And how do you incentivize so that the mix skews to making sure that nobody becomes a victim of success? And there are ways to be able to do that. But at the same time, you have to build in not like a city where prosperity only exists at the rings of the suburbs, where the affluent choose to live outside of the city, and the city itself has no ability to be able to pay for the services it needs. We lived that. That was the sprawl and decline of this region for 50 years. We want to change that. We want to see where people want to live in. And by the way, there's really good models with this. When you see the empty nesters that move in that want to live in an apartment and pay $1,800 a month, and they're moving in from suburban areas and some suburban counties. Or you see the young professional who wants to live in a 600-square-foot apartment and pay $1,200 a month. They don't use much on the public side. They don't have children so that they're not sending them to school. They usually don't need direct public safety services. They don't use, so they put more in than they take out. And when you have a system of a city, you need to have that to be able to provide the services for those that need them, for those that have children, for those that need daycare, for those that need opportunities to have an ambulance visit maybe once a week. You need to have a combination of both. And what I worry about and what upsets me is when the city divides itself and groups divide it between those that are looking for market rate housing and those that are looking for affordable housing. You need to build both. Right now, I need 7,000 units of affordable housing. I need it. I have 7,000 people that qualify for a voucher, and I don't have anywhere to put them. But right now, I have a need for 5,000 market rate housing. I have people who want to move into this city, and there's not a market rate house available. So I need both.
Well, the population of Pittsburgh, and this was brought up last night during the panel discussion at the August Wilson Center, the population of Pittsburgh is half of what it once was. You would think there would be more housing available, wouldn't you?
It is. So on the one side of creating an affordable housing agenda is how do you incentivize to have developers want to build affordable housing? And also on the public sector, how do you create a program that develops affordable housing. So you have these two areas, both on a market rate and a public. But on this third area, and this is a big one for Pittsburgh. Like I said, I have 7,000 people who need affordable housing. I've got over 11,000, maybe as much as 13,000 vacant buildings, blighted properties, empty lots that the city owns. And there is no program to wed the two. There isn't a program that exists where I can go to HUD and say, hey, let me take this street. Let me work with this neighborhood group. Let's hire people from the neighborhood to fix these places up, and then let's let people move into them. And let me rebuild from blight a neighborhood that can thrive and where people can own their own property so they never have the fear of being displaced. So, again, this one I took right to the president. Talked to the president about it on that ultimate Uber trip from the airport to the convention center with him.
The famous limousine ride.
In the Beast, which I didn't realize that thing's called the Beast. He's there like, yeah, you got to get a picture in the Beast. And they're like, okay, what the heck's he talking about? But it's called the Beast.
So what did the president say? What did President Obama say?
He loved the idea. He's there like, I want a proposal to my office today. So my staff stayed in the office till around midnight, and they did it. And they put it together, and they called it Bridges Beyond Blight. And HUD is sitting on it. I met with Secretary Castro about it twice. But what it would do is, here's that voucher, okay? It's people that qualify the voucher still have to put 30% of their own income into the rent that they pay, but the voucher makes up the rest, 30% of their income on a monthly basis, and the voucher makes up the rest. What if we had a third party take that voucher and create equity for it? So the next 20 years, that voucher will pay $110,000 and then be able to use that equity. I'll give the house for free to an organization to fix it up, and that person move into that house and pay that 30%. And instead of having that go to a mortgage to an out-of-town developer that builds a warehouse of poverty that we just tear down in 30 years, they own a house. And you know what that house has? It has a foundation built with massive stones and plaster walls. It has wooden steps. Those houses in Homewood and in Larimer were built at the same time those houses in Squirrel Hill and Shadyside were built. They're built with quality, and they're part of Pittsburgh. What if we rebuilt those? So that's the third part of our affordable housing initiative. We want to be able to work with developers to incentivize inclusionary opportunities for affordable housing for all. So we want to be able to create a system that rewards developers that look at affordability as a component of what they're developing. We want to be able to work on a public plan to build thousands of new units and to be able to start the process of getting even more market-driven happening. And on the third, we want to pilot this program to be able to save some of the beautiful structures and work with nonprofits to train people to work on the site and then give home ownership opportunities to people that would never have it. So it's in the next few months as we go through this in this month, the public discussion, we're going to pull together the ideas that people are sharing. We're not going to pull the people that just pound their fist and say there's a problem. We're going to look for the people in the neighborhoods that are coming up with solutions, and we're going to partner with them, the ones that want to actually make a difference in their own neighborhood and create affordable opportunities. And then we're going to harness that around those three different ideas of public, private, and new ideas, and have an affordable housing initiative that will be unique.
Before we wrap up, as the search process continues to find the Pittsburgh Public Schools next superintendent, what are your feelings about how that process is playing out? I believe that as of March 1st, they are the entity that's been hired to do the search is now going through the applications.
Yeah, I think it's important that the process remain as transparent as possible. So whenever we got to realize, I did this for every director and every assistant director. We'd use Talent City, and reporter would ask, so how many people applied for the police chief? And I'd say, I don't know. I'll find out. And then I'd say, I can't remember what the number was. 87. Oh, where did they apply from? I don't know. I'll find out. And they applied from, you know, this many from the city, this many from the state, and this many from around the country. And we provided all the information to people all along the way so that they knew that the process was open. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I tell the school board and their consultant, it's not a private search. It's a public search. It's a public position paid with public dollars. When people ask what the process is, who's applied, where are they applying from, how many are men, how many are women, how many come from a background in education and have a PhD, how many don't, give the information. It does. It's not a part of a sunshine, you know, even though personnel issues, you're usually protected by the sunshine laws. It's not giving any personal information. It's just giving demographic information. So what I want to see is more transparency.
Mayor Bill Peduto making his monthly visit to the program. As always, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll see you next month, and we'll enjoy the – we'll look forward to the big
Friday
bicentennial celebration.
Everyone come down to City County Building.
City County Building a week from Friday.
Yeah. Get to eat some birthday cake.
Sounds good. And also happy thanks – happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Paul.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. I don't know how I got Thanksgiving out of that. I'm thinking ahead to the next Congress of Cities.
Yes.
It's in November.
Yes.
Good save, right?
No Congress.
Coming up, a talk with author Monique Morris about her book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in School. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.